The hour of 10:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Coulter, do you have a motion for us?
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to approve the minutes from our Thursday, January 12th meeting.
The minutes have been moved. Is there any discussion of the minutes? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion approved. Members are going to continue with our review of higher education. And just to let you know, in case you have a question, I've asked the gentleman to also prepare a review of the history of the University of Minnesota and its relationship with its medical centers so that we will have a better understanding of what will happen when we review the current situation with the University of Minnesota and its request with Fairview. Gentlemen, which one is, was it Mr. Sarby? Identify yourself for the record and please continue.
Mr. Chair and members, again for the tape, Ken Savory, nonpartisan House System staff. I believe we left off on slide 48, which is up on the screen now. I'll just kind of continue from there. This slide kind of represents what the higher education finance accounts are, and accounts being a kind of a specific name for a financial jurisdiction within this committee. So as we discussed before, those four are Office of Higher Education, Minnesota State, the U of M, and then the Mayo Foundation. Moving on, there's kind of just a couple of metrics I want to go through that have been discussed in previous higher ed committees. And the first one I'll talk about happens to do with the percentage of higher education funding as it is represented by the total state budget. So I have a couple of historical slides and we have a current slide as well. So if you look on the upper right-hand screen, you'll see reference to fiscal year 88-89. So 88-89, the total general fund spending, $12.5 billion. And then you'll see in the upper right-hand corner, in the middle right corner, post-secondary education taking up 13.4% of that general fund budget. Moving on to the next slide, slide 50, you'll see the same kind of setup, $13.5 billion budget. And then in the right middle, again, you'll see 8.8% of that general fund expenditure going towards higher education. And then moving forward to kind of our current day, so FY22-23 general fund spending based on the most recent November forecast, you'll see a number of pie pieces, but the one on the middle left-hand side will be higher education at 6.8%. So kind of the comment here is that as the pie changes, as the pie grows, as pieces of the pie shrink, change, adapt, higher education and thus other pieces of the pie change as well. So the percentage in which that is included within the overall budget changes based on other pieces of the pie, as well as the appropriations made in this committee, and as well as appropriations made by the legislature and then approved by the governor. So I'll take a break right there in case there are any questions before we move on to some more higher education terms.
I don't see any questions from the committee, so please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'll continue with some common fiscal terms, just a handful here. Some of these we'll talk about in future slides, but I just wanted to kind of get them on the radar of committee members. The first one being the general fund. That's the most common fund that this committee will be using for appropriations to the four agencies, as well as various bills, as you probably are preparing. The next one is operation and maintenance appropriation. This is a specific line item or line item appropriation that go to the two systems within the committee's jurisdiction. So it'll be in O&M, or operation that means the appropriation, O&M for short, both to the University of Minnesota and to the Minnesota State. These are kind of large funding blocks that are given for the purposes of generally funding the institutions and maintaining it. The next one down is the state special appropriation. I have a couple slides on this, so I won't go into big depth here. But these are specific appropriations to the University of Minnesota for a specific purpose that are outside of the O&M. And then the next dot down is a state share of higher education or tuition revenue split. This is a statutory reference to the percentage of the two systems funding based on their revenue from tuition and their revenue from state appropriations specific to the higher education bill. And then out year by name or tails, we talked about that a little bit earlier, so I'll skip that one for now. So the first topic being state special appropriations at the U of M. There are several state special appropriations, the first one being the Ag special. Now, a common question that members have asked us in the past is how long have these appropriations been in law? Fiscal staff has tracked these appropriations since the mid-1980s, and there are references in earlier statute and earlier session law to the mid-1970s, specifically the agriculture special. You'll see that the base for the ag special is $85 million in 24 and 25, so the where this committee will start will be with that $85 million. It talks about in the session law, this is for alternative energy and biofuel research, and then funding for CFANS, or the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources, as well as horticultural livestock and food systems research. And then there are several other priorities named in law. The next one down is the health science special, the base for that and being $18.4 million. This includes specifically a carve-out of $346,000 for 12 resident physicians at St. Cloud Hospital in the Family Practice Residency Program. And then the remainder of the dollars are specified for health science and veterinary initiatives like the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab.
Mr. Sabre, can you go over, let's go to the ag special at $85.8 million. That's a base appropriation from us. Are there any other funds that would go into those specials, like the ag special, that would not be appropriations from us?
Mr. Chair, yes. So there are other appropriations. For example, the universities do receive federal funding that doesn't really touch the state treasury in a sense, that goes directly to these state institutions. Additionally, there's funding in the ag bill for things related to agriculture research. There's also funding in various other bills for other items that go to the university more generally.
And has there been any controversy over these specials that have been handled by the legislature or the governor in a way that would impact those other funds?
Mr. Chair, there has been a great discussion, and from my understanding, back in the 1980s and 1990s around the state special, specifically the ag special, and how they interact with the state budget. I can't recall the governor's name, but there was a discussion of whether they should go forward or not.
Mr. Sabre, so has there been a governor that has vetoed the specials?
I believe so, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Sabre, if you veto the specials, granted the base appropriation would go away, but those other monies would go away too because the special isn't there to receive them.
Mr. Chair, yes. Specifically, if those other dollars used for specific research were described in law as matching funds, meaning that one entity, the university, puts toward a certain sum of money and the legislature matches that. So there would be matching, possible matching issues if certain funding were to go away.
Members, these specials have been played with in the past, and we're not going to play with them this session. So I want you to pay close attention when the university does its presentation that we're not just talking about a base appropriation here. We're talking about millions on top of that appropriation that come from the federal and private sectors. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you. Chair, I'm very happy to hear you say we're not going to play with the ag specials. It's really important to our state that the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Sciences has these, and I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on your intent. So thank you. I would not be supportive of playing with the ag specials. Thank
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe in the interim, I'm not sure if which of the two researchers did the graph, but I have a three-page graph that you may be of interest to, or a spreadsheet, I should say. Chair, that is primarily LCCMR funding, but not exclusively additional funding that has gone to the University of Minnesota for research. And it totals $100 million on top of what we see here. And I know as I track some other bills, other times, you know, being on the Ways and Means Committee, we see all kinds of things. One of the proposed bills coming through, which was the environment bill, had an additional $23 million, which of course didn't pass because nothing passed last session. But I think it would behoove us to also look at some of the funds that are also going to the University of Minnesota that are not necessarily exactly within our jurisdiction, but they certainly are in the sense that we do see all kinds of money from all different sources within the state budget going to the University of Minnesota that we don't directly look at, but it'd be nice to take a totality of look at that.
Representative O'Neill, the university has been informed of that, and I'm hopeful that in their presentation they will tell us the extent of those other funds, even though we have little or no control over them unless we, of course, repeal or line item veto these special. And that would be disastrous on a number of fronts. At least twice, members, these specials have been dealt blows. and they were critical blows. I was involved in a phone conversation with the governor and the president of the University of Minnesota that was, shall we say, very frank about vetoing, line item vetoing these specials. So we're going to take great care with what they are and where the funds come from, but we're not going to deal with any elimination of the specials, just to be clear. Thank you. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, we'll go to the remaining state specials. There is one for the College of Science and Engineering state special, historically often referred to as the Institute of Technology, $2.2 million for geological survey and the Town of Youth Mathematics program. Below that is the system special, a base of $14.3 million with appropriations or specified appropriations of $2 million per year to NRRI, which is the Natural Resource Research Institute near Duluth. And then the remainder of funding is for Center of Urban Regional Affairs, CURA, and then the Bell Museum of Natural History and the Humphrey exhibit. Going on to slide 55, the last state special we'll talk about is the University of Minnesota Mayo Foundation Partnership with a base of $15.9 million with $7.4 million per year designated for research partnerships between the university and the Mayo Foundation for biotechnology and medical genomics. And there's an additional designated amount of $500,000 for conducting Alzheimer's related research. Mr. Chair, we'll move on to another item, which is Minnesota
Before
statute.
Before you move off page 55, the most recent of the additions, the last one on Alzheimer's, that was recently added, wasn't it, as a result of Senator Tomasoni and Representative Lizegard?
Mr. Chair, I can't recall exactly when the $500,000 for Alzheimer's research was added, but I believe it's during my time at the legislature, which is approximately 10 years, but I do remember that being added.
If we represent, yeah, I'm sorry, Representative Cole.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, I think you might be referring to money that was dedicated for research into ALS, and that was done last year, and that I believe was the Tomasoni bill.
Thank you. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, we'll move on to slide 56, which is a reference to Minnesota Statute 135A.01. I won't go into this super deep, but generally, this sets out the intent of the legislature, or the intent of the legislature to provide stable funding for public post-secondary education. And the two metrics that this statute lays out are the metrics of tuition revenue for the institutions as well as state appropriations. So it's kind of that balance between how much is the state providing for institutions for appropriations and how much is being charged for for tuition revenue. Next slide, it applies, that 135A.01 applies to the two systems within the jurisdiction, which is the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State. The graphic kind of lays out the tuition percentage appropriation in one column, the fiscal year in the left-hand column, and the appropriation percentage in the right-hand column. The statute references 67% as the intent of the statute to provide in terms of appropriation percentage. You'll see in 2002 and 2003, that is when, for the University of Minnesota, the balance or the intent of the 67% began to change below the 67% threshold. So you'll see in 2002, appropriations were 68%, and then in 2003, that number goes to 64%, which is obviously below the 67% threshold that 135A.01 references. And then you'll see on the left-hand side, you'll see more modern day years. So 2023, 59% from tuition, and then 41% from state appropriation. And then Mr. Chair, moving to the next slide, this is the same exact graphic, but with Minnesota State data instead of University of Minnesota data. You'll see on your 2002 and 2003 in the right-hand columns and middle column, it's a similar story compared to the University of Minnesota. That is when the percentage dips below that 67% mark in 02 and 03, or begins to dip below in 02 and 03. And then in 2023, in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see the modern-day appropriation percentages, which is 52.9% in 2023 and then 47.1% in tuition. So that's kind of where we are today and where the committee will be making decisions about. Mr. Chair, we'll move on to slide 59. I won't say a lot here, but I just want members to have this. This is a kind of a bar graph history of appropriations made to the general through the higher education general fund appropriations. And the two sources for that are the omnibus finance bill in odd numbered years and the supplemental finance bill in even numbered years. So you'll see kind of general impacts of the various cuts and or additions that are made over the course of the last from 2006 to projections in 24 and 25. You'll see dips in 2009, 10, 11, 12, effects of the Great Recession and the state budget having to be changed, as well as expansions in 2017, 18, 19, and 20 as the state recovers from various recession items. Mr. Chair, I'm going to pause here to take any questions on the previous handful of slides.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of a request to you, something that we had talked about kind of offline a little bit about the increasing salaries and number of administrators in both systems, and if there's any correlation with the increased cost of tuition. And I know that we at the state have done the best we can, as much as we can, to support that. But it'd be interesting to see that overlay of administration both increase in number and in their salaries.
Representative O'Neill, we're going to take a look at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, we'll start back up on slide 60. I just wanted to give members an overview of, or some general overview of the 2021 session in terms of items that were in the higher education omnibus finance bill. This graphic, it's important to look at the net general fund total at the bottom. I'll just do some quick overview of that. If you look at in the middle, you'll see a column called forecast based FY22-23. That's what the previous legislature was budgeting for. And you'll see enacted FY22-23. If you go all the way to the bottom, it says net general fund total impact. If you take the difference between what was enacted, the $3.506 billion, compared to the forecast base of $3.406 billion, you'll have a difference of $100 million. So that's what the conference committee's target was in the previous legislature. Additionally, you'll see columns to the right of that with the percentage changes of enacted versus the base. And then you'll see what the projection is in FY24-25. So what was going to come back to the legislature when the legislature reconvened in the next odd-numbered year session. And that number on the right will often change based on supplemental bills that are passed before the legislature. So at this time, this moment in time, it's a snapshot of what was going to happen in FY24-25. And as you can see, when you compare the enacted FY24-25 to the enacted FY22-23, those numbers are relatively similar. And as the committee discussed before, it's the difference between an inflating tails number, a flat tails number, or a reducing tails number. And this one in FY24-25 is largely flat. So the contents, Mr. Chair, of the 2021 Higher Education Omnibus Finance Bill can be looked at as a pie graph. The higher ed bill is made of the four components in which we talked about before, the two systems, Office of Higher Education and the Mayo Foundation. You look at various pieces of the pie represent various percentages of the pie. And so for Minnesota State, of the general fund money, 45% went to them. The U of M on the left-hand side, 39% went to them. And the Office of Higher Ed, 16% went to them. And then Mayo, a very small portion compared to the other pieces of the pie.
And members, when we get to the University of Minnesota and Minn State, you will notice a dramatic difference in what they are proposing for their budgets. That will be an interesting discussion for us. I have never seen this type of difference between the University of Minnesota and Minn State, and I'm sure you'll have some questions as to why. Representative McDonald. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if, Mr. Savory, do you happen to know the number of students in each of these systems, Minn State versus University of Minnesota, if you've got any.
Mr. Savory.
Chair and members, I don't have that information at the top of my head, but we can certainly keep bringing that back to you, if it would be helpful.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's important to just understand in previous iterations of budget conversations, and maybe their numbers are less now because we've had a decline, but the University of Minnesota tends to be around 60,000 students, and they get almost $4 billion in the biennium, where Minn State has exceeding 400,000, somewhere around 450, depending on, and we've seen quite a drop in enrollment, which is why we like some of the newer numbers, but they have 1.6, so just slightly more, but they have tremendously higher numbers of students. So it's something that I bring up every time that we do these budget conversations, because I think it's important to be fair and equitable, and the systems, I know that a lot of it goes to research and such, but I just think that conversation needs to be had as well about how many students in each system.
Thank you. Representative Nord.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to inquire about the forecast that, you know, being flat, knowing that there was a, you know, federal funds that was stabilizing some of the universities, and we've also seen the decline in some of the colleges. Can you really connect the two issues here?
Mr. Savory.
Mr. Chair and members, kind of putting federal funding aside for a moment, I will just say that funding for higher education tends to be countercyclical, meaning that when there is economic uncertainty or economic trouble, there tends to be more students kind of rushing back to institutions to get retrained, change jobs, better their education, and that takes a several-year cycle. And then the legislature will catch up to that kind of after, while that progress is going on. So the two don't really happen at the same time. But there are times, as Representative Nord mentioned, when federal funding does come in and does stabilize in times of great uncertainty, the COVID-19 pandemic probably being a decent example of that. I don't have those numbers in terms of right now in front of me in terms of how much each institution received, but we can certainly do some research and return to the committee with that.
Representative Nord.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly we will need the data. Thank you, Mr. Saber.
Representative Nord, as I understand it too, the universities became somewhat of a pass-through. A lot of the money went directly to the students, not to the university. But those numbers, again, would be a good idea to review. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. I had a question around the Mayo funding. I know some of it is research, but there's also a residency program as well that's based not in Rochester, but actually in Greater Minnesota at some of our community clinics. Does this include both of those programs?
Mr. Savory.
Mr. Chair, I am unsure. We can look into that and get back to the committee.
Thank you so much.
Representative Hicks, that's it.
That is it.
Representative Cleaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just like to ask, please, that we not try to compare the two systems or the students per se, but that we look at the needs of the students in each system, and that we look at the needs of each system. It's kind of like trying to compare apples and oranges with the missions and the goals and the students and the needs. So I just would like for us to level set kind of that way. Thank you.
Representative Cleburne, I think when we're done, you will get an answer to that question. We are going to take a different look at both of these systems as unique. So, and in that, there may be a way to do funding in a unique way also. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you mentioned, the monies that were passed through and went to the student. So was that the federal COVID money?
Yes.
And then so, Mr. Chair, how did that get through the, it went through the universities to the students, and then the students had free will with the money, or they paid off their student debt, or what was the?
Representative McDonald, we're gonna go back and review it specifically. I don't want to attempt to answer that question right now.
Very good, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll be anxious to hear the details on that.
Any further questions? Mr. Savory.
Mr. Chair, we'll continue at slide 62. This is the same graphic as before on the previous page. but I wanted to divide out just to give members a sense of the vastness or the large appropriation that goes for the state grant program. As you'll see, if you divide the state grant program from the Office of Higher Education other budget, you'll see that over $400 million goes to the state grant program. So nothing really new here on this slide, but I just wanted to point to members out just the size of that particular appropriation. Mr. Chair, this is just some overview slides of the previous higher education under this finance bill for 2021. This isn't an exhaustive list, but kind of the highlights of what was in the bill. There were other items that aren't in these slides, but just wanted to give members a flavor of kind of what was in there. As you'll see, they're kind of laid out based on various appropriations. So the Office of Higher Education had increases for the state grant program. Emergency assistance to students had a reduction for interstate tuition reciprocity appropriations. Establish a new program for underrepresented teacher candidates, additional appropriations for a Hunger Free Campus Act, and then aspiring teacher color scholarships, which was one-time money, and then additional appropriations for College Possible were just some of the items that were in there. Now these items will potentially, you'll see them in other spreadsheets as we go through this legislative session. So these are generally appropriations to be familiar with and to recognize. The next slide is the same item for Minnesota State. We'll talk about how the appropriation article is kind of set up in a couple slides, but generally for both Minnesota State and the U of M, there is an appropriation for operations and maintenance, and there are specified riders or specified amounts within the operations and maintenance for specific purposes of specific programs, and these are kind of a flavor of what some of those are. So for example, the operation and maintenance increase was $45 million to the base. And then there was again a base increase for specifically supplemental aid to non-metro colleges of $5.4 million, and then an additional $1.5 million increase one time for mental health awareness, and then $1 million increase for workforce development scholarships, $500,000 for Z-degree textbook program, and then $1 million increase one time for supporting students' basic needs, which is somewhat similar to some of the mental health awareness program.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know historically what has been spent year or biennium over biennium on operations and maintenance increases, but $45 million base increase seems like a lot. Is that pretty typical?
Mr. Savory?
Mr. Chair and members, I do have a slide in probably five or six down the road that goes over the history of targets for conference committees that may help to give some context for how much money in terms of an increase or decrease. But typically, there has been a general notion to increase operations and maintenance. And in my time here, that has varied from year to year.
Thank you.
Representative Scott, we're going to also relink this committee with capital investment and take a look at higher education asset preservation, which also falls in this area. That is now a very critical component of higher education, particularly with other issues that we're going to take a look at. So you hang on to your question and press it when we get to higher education asset preservation.
Thank you.
Savory?
Chair and members, the next slide is for the University of Minnesota, which included an operation maintenance increase of $38 million, and then $36 million of that was ongoing, so that went into the tail, so it went down slightly. And then just listing off the various state of special appropriations like we reviewed before, generally unchanged from a previous biennium, with the one exception of the system special, which had a one-time increase of $500,000 for NRRI. And then, Mr. Chair, there is a non-general fund item that typically appears in the funding bill, which is a biennial appropriation to the U of M, $4.3 million for the Healthcare Access Fund. And that goes to help fund primary care education physicians. And it was established by the legislature in the 1990s. The concern between the legislature and Governor Carlson at the time was that there weren't enough primary care and or primary care rural physicians, so that's why this particular appropriation was put into place.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, we will move on to the most recent finance bill, that came before the legislature. As members that are attorney may recall, this was a measure that the House passed, the Senate discussed, and then that was tabled, so it did not reach the governor's desk. I won't say a lot about it, but I want to, one, include the spreadsheet as you had it in members' packets of what the contents of the bill were, just so people are aware, just so members are aware of that. And as you review that, please let Mr. Hopkins and I know if you have questions about the previous bill. As you can see on line 12 of that photo, you'll see the target for the specific item was $20 million and 26 of it going into the tails with $8.8 million for the Office of Higher Ed, $8.1 million for Minnesota State, and then $3 million for the University of Minnesota. So as you review that spreadsheet, please reach out with questions. Mr. Chair, the next item is the history of spending targets. It's about a 10-year history. Going back to 2012, you'll see the even years are supplemental years. So sometimes there either is no target or there is no funding bill. So that's what the dash means, or a zero. And then you'll see the numbers vary greatly between odd numbers year, which are typically budget years. So some of those numbers are considerably larger than ones that are for even numbered years, which are supplemental years. So that kind of is the history of kind of generally when that funding came from. And Mr. Chair, I'll pause here for a break of the last handful of slides.
Mr. Savior, I appreciate the designation of what a budget year is and what a non-budget year is, as illustrated by your chart. And 2022 would have been an anomaly given the size of the surplus, which made the $20 million sort of a comment on resources that weren't being used, I'll put it that way, and could have been used to increase that amount. So members, we're going to do our focus this year, and then we'll see what happens in the 2024. But the focus of our work will be on the budget for this cycle, this year. Mr. Savory.
Mr. Chair, we'll head to the next slide, which is slide 69. This is the structure of the omnibus finance bill format. So it's broken into several sections. One being the Office of Higher Ed, there's typically appropriations for state grants, other financial aid programs, and then other riders that are within the Office of Higher Education. Additionally, there's a section for Minnesota State, which composes of the central offices and services, so the central administration, operations and maintenance, as we discussed before, and then designated spending riders within operations and maintenance for specific purposes. And sometimes there are additionally other riders outside of O&M that also are for the Minnesota State. Additionally, there's a section for the University of Minnesota, which is operations and maintenance, the specific spending riders, and then the state special appropriations, as we discussed before. And then finally, the Mayo Foundation, the medical school, and the various residency programs. And then following that would typically be a section on policy or any other items that the committee would like to include. Slide 70, I just wanted to give everyone or give the members of the committee a basis or a base of jumping off of where the base appropriations are for the various committees or various state agencies within our committee's jurisdiction. So FY24-25 base, the year in which the committee will be budgeting for, and the FY26-27, which is the tails impact down the line. You'll see base appropriations for the Office of Higher Education of $545 million. These dollars are in thousands. And then of that, state grant is $420 million in base appropriations. And then all other appropriations represent $125 million. Of those all other appropriations, 38 additional riders within those other appropriations, so 38 different line items for specific programs or purposes at the Office of Higher Education. Moving on to slide 71 is the same graphic for Minnesota State. So base appropriations of $1.5 billion, O&M appropriations of that 1.5, central office being $68 million of the 1.79 million or billion, and then the Learning Network of Minnesota, which is another rider outside of the O&M at $8 million. typically for operations and maintenance in Minnesota State, there have been riders. Most currently, there were six, one for supplemental aid, an additional one for workforce development scholarships, a rider for the Cook County Higher Education Board, a rider specifically for sexual assault policies, the ISRS, or Next Generation Software Program, and then the Z Degree Textbook Program, were the riders in the most previous bill, most recent bill. And then, Mr. Chair, moving on to slide 72, is the same graphic for the University of Minnesota. Total base appropriations of $1.378 billion, O&M appropriations of $1.2 billion. State specials, as we looked before, $138 million, and then that non-general fund money from the Healthcare Access Fund at $2.7 million. The previous iteration of the funding for the University of Minnesota, the O&M portion, had four riders, one for health training restoration, one for medical school development, a third for Min Drive, and the final one was for the Morris campus for scholarship payment assistance. Slide 73 is for the Mayo Foundation. As you can see, $2.7 million in the base, and that is broken into two line items for the medical school and then the family and residency program. And Mr. Chair, I wanted to, on slides 74 and 75, just leave members with some information on the bonding items that typically come to higher education institutions. There's two different types, HEPR, which is Higher Education Asset Preservation Replacement. There's a statutory definition of HEPR, so it had to fit within that definition or be an eligible project. An example of that would be code compliance, ADA compliance, hazardous materials abatement, and then air quality improvements are kind of examples of what HEPR can be used for the content of a bonding bill.
Mr. Savory, as a charter member of the Anti-Flat Roof Society, I'm most interested in higher education asset preservation and replacement, particularly when roofs begin to fall that are flat. So we'll keep the committee aware. I prefer a pitched roof with all of our utilities under it rather than a flat roof with a lot of snow ready to leak into the building.
Mr.
Go ahead,
Chair.
Proceed. Representative David.
Do you know who one of the other charter members was of the Flat Roof Society?
I believe you were.
And there's another one. I was, and there's another one.
Henry Kalis.
Former Representative Steve Trimble.
And Henry Kalis, too. There was once a group of us that were anti-flat roof.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, I'd like to join that group. I own a 100-year-old building in Delano. It's a flat roof, and there's a lot of snow, and it leaks.
I think we're going to resurrect the Anti-Flat Roof Society.
Good.
It's about time it was reborn again. Mr. Savory.
Mr. Chair, the last slide is line 75. Just some information here on general obligation bonds. That's the second type of project-specific funding that can be at a that could be for specifically the institutions or higher education. So general obligation bonds. Generally, there are three points there. There has to be publicly owned, capital expenditure, and for a public purpose, which kind of falls within the scope of what many of the higher education buildings are. And it requires a supermajority of the legislative body in which to pass, which in the House is 81 votes. So, Mr. Chair, that kind of concludes the bonding portion as well as concludes my portion of the presentation. We'll stand for questions.
Mr. Savior, Mr. Hopkins, thank you. I requested that they do this so that we would have a better understanding of the budget proposals that are coming at us and that those entities wouldn't have to necessarily go into this much detail, that you'd have the detail already. So if you do have further questions, Mr. Hopkins, Mr. Savory would be ready to answer them. Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is in regards to, we're looking at tuition here, how much we're paying for and several other things. But the cost of housing for students has become a major critical component of, cost for college. Are we going to really address those issues in this committee, or do we just defer that to a different group?
Representative Muir, I'm not sure exactly how we're going to interact with the housing committee. I did visit with a former housing chair, Alice Hausman, at her event last Thursday. and she brought that up too. So I realize the cost of housing and also the cost of food. Both of them are now critical components. I'm not sure what this committee will do or how much of an asset that we'll get to be able to invest in that, but it is a critical component of higher education. Representative
Mr. Chair, as I look through the budget, you'll see that it's only $800,000 for the emergency assistance, which is where students rely on. And also, if you look at the hunger-free campus, it's very small. I think that those are a few things that we can start looking at to support the students while we try to find long-term solutions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Keep reminding us, Representative Nor. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the spreadsheet, line 52, supporting students' basic needs, it's an increase of 100% from $1 million to $2 million, so one-time increase for this next 24-25. So in that basic student needs, I would presume that a basic student need would be food, shelter, perhaps emergency. So is that fund put on top of the meal fund, the food fund, and the housing fund, and the emergency fund, excuse me.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe Representative Nor is referencing two line items or two programs at the Office of Higher Education, and you're referencing a program at Minnesota State. So they are all within that continuum. They are stacked on top of one another. They are separate appropriations, yes.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, it's been a while since I've been on this committee. Last time was with Mr. Representative Pawlowski in 13-14. Could you just remind me or the rest of the committee what the students' basic needs, what are basic needs?
Mr. Savior.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have the exact definition in front of me, but this was a governor's budget proposed change that came before the legislature. So it's not necessarily defining what basic needs are, but it is appropriating dollars to address those. We can do some research and pull the previous budget books and get the what the program definition was for you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. I think that would be important. I guess we're putting $2 million into basic needs, and if we can't describe what basic needs are in this committee, then we got some basic need information necessary in the future. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Chair?
I would, Representative McDonald. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't remember if I read this or heard this somewhere, but it has to do with employment at, I think it was the U of M, and that they have all these job openings in the food service on campus. Is that, I see Representative Cleavorn shaking her head. When I was in school, you know, students could take those jobs and earn money and probably eat for free. And I'm just wondering if somebody could look into, are there job openings there in food service? Are they available for students to take? And if so, what comes with a job there? What do they make, and do they get to eat for free?
So. Representative, we're going to look into that, too. I agree. Representative Cleavorn, did you have a comment?
I do. Well, I have a comment, and then
we're getting
close to
session time.
So. This will be a project I would like to ask of Mr. Hopkins at some point in the future. So. First, I'd like to, if you will indulge me, to answer Representative Scott's question. My son did work in university food service. He was paid below what was offered in other places for payment, and he was allowed one free meal when he was in college, one free meal per shift. So that was just my son's experience there. But to Mr. Hopkins, one of the questions I would ask if you could provide for me or to the chair, when we pay state bonding dollars for an improvement at the University of Minnesota specifically, with their autonomy, who actually controls the transfer if that building is transferred at a later date? So who actually who owns that building? And it's just a general knowledge question I would like to know as we go forward with any kind of requests for bonding or.
Representative Cleavorn, I see them nodding their heads. We'll get that for you.
Thank you.
Members, we have session coming up, and to get over to session, it does take a little bit of a walk. So anyone have a final question? Gentlemen, thank you again, and we'll be revisiting this topic many times. And with that, meeting is adjourned.